Welcome to the Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. I'm your host, Andrew Rines, and today is May 5th, 2010. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you plan on doing any online shopping, do go to otrwesterns.com/Amazon to start your shopping experience today. Today's episode, or should I say episodes, are going to be Challenge of the Yukon. Original air date for the first ones, March 30th, 1944, and the title is A Pack of Bacon. And the second one is April 6th, 1944, and the title is Edward Carson. Hope you guys enjoy.
The Challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. Corporal Standish was one of the youngest men on the force of the Northwest Mounted Police. He smiled to himself as he glanced at his two prisoners plodding along the frozen trail, Jack Snyder and Sam McLean, two of the wiliest criminals to set foot in the Yukon. With a sense of pride, he anticipated the satisfaction he'd experience when he marched them into headquarters. But fate sometimes cheats a man of a hard-earned victory. And even as Corporal Standish urged his team on confidently,
"Mush, you Malibos, mush!"
Jack Snyder spoke guardedly to his partner.
"At the rate we're traveling, both of us will be looking through bars mighty soon unless we make a break. Now listen, you got nothing to lose. They'll end up hanging both of us, and you know it."
"Yeah. Seems like you and that Mountie have been kind of palsy. Maybe you figure he'll close his eyes and let us run away."
"Well, I've been trying to make him think we're letting him take us in without any trouble."
"Yeah, just two model prisoners."
"Yeah, you're jittery. Losing your nerve and what little brains you had. Gotta be making camp in an hour or so. And when we bunk down for the night, watch me."
"You mean you got something planned?"
"Don't I always? Just wait, Sam. Our friend the corporal's in for a big surprise."
Corporal Standish had been overconfident. The moment he relaxed his guard was all that Jack Snyder needed.
"Jump him, Sam. Here. That's it.
Grab the gun.
I've got it. Take it easy, Monty.
You'll never get away with this, Snyder."
"Yeah, you're wrong. We are getting away with it. I'll keep him covered while you get the sled set to mush, Sam.
Wait till I get this pack back on it."
The young Monty stood watching Sam McLean load the supplies on the sled. Minutes dragged by, and then...
"Everything ready?"
"Yeah, come on."
"Right. So long, Corporal Standish. Sorry it was necessary to take your grub."
"I'll catch up with you if it's the last thing I do."
"Yeah, probably will be. You're miles from nowhere, Monty. And if the wolves don't get you, the cold will." "Get the dogs going, Sam."
"Marsh, you Malamute."
"See, Sam, Monty's have quite a reputation, but they're like all lawmen."
"I'll give you credit for the break, Jack. Come on, Marsh. But I still think you should have dropped him."
"Oh, it's better this way. If we'd have killed him, somebody would have found him. Maybe before we could get to Skagway. But as it is, he'll do a lot of wandering without dogs and no gun. And when and if he's found, it'll look like what you might call a natural death."
"Mush, you Malamute!"
Corporal Standish had one thought as he walked along the moonlit trail.
"Letting them slip through my fingers. I've got to get help. Find someone who'll lend me a sled."
The young policeman set a brisk pace for himself, realizing he must cover as much territory as possible while he had strength. In spite of himself, his heart sank with misgivings as he thought of the uneven odds. Two men on a sled against the time he could make on foot. The Yukon wilderness was a land of wild beauty and brooding stillness. On a sled with a good pack of dogs, Corporal Standish had many times experienced an exhilaration in its loneliness. Now, he felt the terrible challenge it hurled. He remembered the men who died on the trails, unable to bear the cold and hardship of a merciless country. Doggedly, he kept walking, his feet aching and blistered in his boots. Daylight came. And then another day. And he began losing track of time.
Got to keep going. Can't stop. Keep going. My eyes. I feel like they're full of sand. Snow blindness. I thought I was heading for Preston's territory, but I might have lost my trail. It's hopeless. I'll never make it. But I'll keep going. Maybe I...
The great dog King tilted his nose in the sharp Yukon air.
On King! On you, King!
King's more over ahead of the dogs than with him. It's almost as if he... Stopping, let us catch up with him. All right, fella. What's the idea? Don't the dogs go fast enough to please you? What in the world? What are you listening for, boy?
But King wasn't listening. His sense of smell often told him things long before his ears picked up a sound. And now, he'd caught the scent of a man he recognized, a man Sergeant Preston knew. He glanced back toward the Mountie.
What is it, Preston?
In answer, King raced along the trail, knowing the Mountie would follow him.
On you, Husky!
King stopped beside the prostrate man minutes before the sled reached the spot. He recognized the Mountie's uniform and knew that when Preston found his friend, there'd be an explanation.
Hello, you huskies. Hello. Why, it's Standish. Well, he hasn't been wounded. But how could he have lost his sled?
Who?
It's Preston, Stan. What happened?
Preston.
He's lost consciousness. Come on, fella. This looks bad, King. Mighty bad.
Sergeant Preston watched over the young policeman as he regained his strength. At intervals, Corporal Standish told his story until finally he completed it. Preston frowned, and King, who was quick to sense his master's thoughts, stood quietly beside him.
And I was bragging about my stripes. I'll be lucky if I don't lose them after this.
Get the dogs up, King. That's it, fella. You get the sled, Stan.
Where do we go from here, Sergeant?
We'll retrace your steps and see if we can't find some evidence of the direction I took.
If you ask me, they're heading straight for Skagway just as fast as my dog can get them there.
At a camp beside a trail a few days later, Jack Snyder looked into the fire.
What's on your mind? No, Sam, it's just possible that Mountie got through to some help. What if he did? If he did, you'd know the first place we'd head for.
Yeah?
That's why we're laying low for a few days.
Hey, now, wait a minute, Jack.
We've got enough provisions. I say we ought to turn off here and stop at Fort Munn. We'll stock up, then mush toward Juneau. Get a boat there. See what I mean?
I don't know. Seems kind of risky to me.
Well, it's a safer bet than walking into a trap at Skagway.
If there is a trap, you should have dropped that, Molly. I told you that before we left.
Well, we didn't. We can't go back now. Just remember, Sam, it was me that got us away from that lawman. And I ain't planning to walk into another one.
Okay. You win. We'll turn off.
Early the next morning, the two fugitives turned off the trail and the heavy snow covered their tracks. Toward mid-afternoon, they made camp and together went out with the Mountie's rifle to look for some game. When they returned to their camp, the snow had stopped falling.
This is one night we won't have to settle for bacon. Good thing you dropped this dough.
Yeah, it'll be a chick. Hey, Jack. Somebody's been here while we was gone.
Somebody nothing. Here, look at these tracks.
A bear. Well, I'll be... And he got into the grub. Made off with every last piece of bacon.
Well, I was getting sick of eating it anyway. Add to the fire, will you?
Meanwhile, Sergeant Preston and Corporal Standish stopped at the point of the trail where Jack Snyder and Sam McClain had made a turn. The sergeant decided to make camp, and King raced through the timber, leaving the two policemen together. Snow was soft beneath his feet as he ran, his nose tilted in the air, sampling the scents of the wilderness. King enjoyed these runs by himself when he was free of the responsibility of keeping the team of dogs in line. Occasionally, he heard a twig snapping under the feet of an unseen animal. And then... But wait. What was that? King stopped, his lean, muscular body momentarily rigid. A bear. But with the scent of the bear came another scent. Bacon. Where would a bear find bacon in this wilderness unless... Unless he had gone into a man's camp and eaten man's food. The great dog knew the marauder-like habits of these animals, and his curiosity was aroused. No bear had broken into Sergeant Preston's rations. There must be another camp in the vicinity. He followed the bear tracks.
What was that?
Huh?
I could have sworn I saw something moving back near the timber. Looked like a wolf.
Yeah, you're imagining things.
A wolf? Maybe a dog.
Wolves travel in packs, and so do dogs. Forget it.
As King raced back over the snow-covered country, his mind was in a turmoil. He knew that Sergeant Preston and the younger Mountie were trailing two men. This was the only camp within miles, he was sure. Would they be the men, the two he had seen sitting by the campfire? Preston would know.
What is it, boy? Hey, seems like he's trying to say something, Sergeant. He's getting the team lined up. Hey, what is this anyway?
That's strange. He's lining them up, but I wonder why.
King knew the distance could be covered much faster in the sled, and he used every device he could think of to make the Mountie understand him.
I don't know what you're trying to say, King.
I never saw anything like it in my life. Taking your sleeve and leading you to the sled. Looks to me like he wants you to get ready to mush.
Well, that seems to be it, huh, King?
But we've just made camp. Oh, whatever it is, it can wait.
Well, that's where you're wrong, Stan. Whatever it is, King thinks I should see it now. And that's what we're going to do.
King led the team to the small camp where Jack Snyder and Sam McClain sat by the fire. Too late, they recognized Corporal Standish as he approached them.
That's McClain and Snyder, Sergeant.
Jack, he followed us. I told you should have dropped
him. Shut up. All right, Monty. You've got us covered.
And this time, Snyder, I'm going to keep you covered.
It was a week later when Sergeant Preston walked into Inspector Maynard's office. And as his superior congratulated Corporal Standish, the young Mountie looked uncomfortable.
You've done a fine piece of work, Corporal. All goes to prove you deserve those stripes you won.
Sir, if it hadn't been for Sergeant Preston and his dog...
Sergeant? What do you mean, Standish?
I think, sir, the Corporal means that King and I made the trip with him. We met on the trail.
Is that so? Well, sometimes it helps having a friend with you on the trail. Gets lonesome at times.
Well, I'll be...
What's that, Corporal?
I said it does help, sir. Yes, it's a mighty big help. And I won't forget it, Sergeant.
Yes, King, old boy. The Corporal's case is closed.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at the same time. This is Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Real quick, I want to mention the great deal that Audible is offering today. If you go to otrwesterns.com/book, you can get a 14-day free gold account and your choice of a free audiobook. Audible has over 75,000 audiobooks and more. Also, Audible works with over 500 devices. For more information, go to otrwesterns.com/book.
The Challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. Edward Carson had been married to Stella Burns a year. It was a year that proved the skeptics wrong who'd called it an impossible match, saying Eddie would never settle down. It had been a year of thinking of someone else's happiness before his own. It had meant sacrifices, taking a job in her father's bank because Stella wanted him to. Young Carson thought of these things as he stood before his father-in-law's desk in a prominent city bank in the United States in 1875.
Eddie, you know what it would mean to Stella's mother if I were to be exposed in a scandal. The shock would kill her. And you know what Stella thinks of her mother.
Yeah, I know. But you should have thought that before.
I should have, I guess. But the damage is done. The bank examiners will be here in a week. You've got to help me, Eddie. You can go away. Stella would understand. I'd tell her why you left. All my life, I've been a prominent citizen. She'd never be able to hold her head up if the story should get out.
Well, it'd be just as bad for her if her husband were branded a thief.
Not if she knew the truth.
A week later, when the story broke and Edward Carson was branded a thief, Frank Burns appeared to be stunned. In his large home, he spoke soothingly to his daughter, Stella.
There now, Stella. It's no use crying. He was doing so well. But he always had a wild streak in him. I told you that when you married him. It's best to just forget about him. You make your home with Mother and me and forget about Eddie Carson.
It was months later, and in the dingy saloon on the waterfront, Eddie Carson, now known as John Smith, sat reading a newspaper.
Hey, Smith, come over here and see what Smith's reading. He's reading the society page of the newspaper. Says, Mrs. Stella Carson died last night in St. Mary's Hospital. Her baby daughter...
Shut up, you drunken sailor!
What's the matter, Smitty? Shame to be in caught reading the society page, huh? Oh, I read it all the time when I drink me spot of tea.
Shut up! Why, you...
Maybe that'll teach you to mind your own business.
Twenty years passed, and in Frank Burns' house, the old man sent for his granddaughter.
It's about your father. You know the story of what happened.
Yes, I know.
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth about it. Stella, he never took that money.
What?
I took it. I'd made a lot of bad investments.
But they told me he left a note that...
He took the blame to cover up for me.
Did my mother know that? Did you tell her before she died?
No. No, I didn't tell her.
You mean she died believing my father was a thief when all the time he'd been shielding you?
Well, I meant to tell her, but...
But you didn't.
Stella... If ever a man paid for what he did,
You've had security and comfort all this time, but what about my father?
Security. I haven't had a penny I could call my own these last 20 years.
Well, what have we been living on?
We've been living on the money your father sent.
Where did he send it from?
All over. He sent money from the Argentine, Singapore, Madagascar, the East Indies, Amsterdam.
But where was he when you last heard from him? How long ago was it?
About 2 months ago.
Well, where was he then? Grandfather, please, where was he then?
Open the first drawer in the chest over there. That's where I put the envelope. You see it? Where is it postmarked?
Postmarked Dawson. Yukon Territory.
Several months had passed. Stella Carson's determination to find her father had led her to the Yukon. In Dawson, she found no trace of Edward Carson and had moved on further inland to Clover City, where she talked to Sergeant Preston. Eddie Carson, who still was known simply as John Smith, owned the Black Ace Saloon. And he sat in a back room with a bottle of whiskey at his elbow as the Mountie talked to him. 20 years had made many changes in the appearance of the man who'd lived in different climates in countries all over the globe. Slowly, he reached for the whiskey to refill his glass.
Drink, Sergeant?
No, thanks, John. What about all this? I've been watching you ever since that girl came to town. I've never seen you show an interest in any individual before, man or woman. This Carson is young. About 20, I imagine. Young enough, John, to be your daughter.
All right. You seem to have put everything together. Maybe you've guessed the truth.
I knew the truth, John, when you signed the mine over to her. You aren't usually so...
So generous? Did you tell her?
Of course not. Your secret is your own. So far as she knows, you were just making a gesture to a young girl who's apparently alone in the world. She probably chalked it up to a drunken whim of yours. I don't think she even knows the value of the mine.
Well, it's rich enough to take care of her all her life.
But the most important thing to her is to find her father.
That's no use, Sergeant. You don't understand. You said she probably thought my turning the mine over to her was a drunken gesture. You're right. If she thinks of me at all, she thinks of me as a broken-down old fool.
No. No, John, that isn't true.
Sure it's true. Don't you think I've known it? She feels sorry for me. 20 years is a long time. I've done too many things. That's no use. It can't go back.
Well, I wish you'd think it over.
I have thought it over. I've been a lucky man, Sergeant. I've lived long enough to see my daughter. It's more than I've ever hoped for.
The word that Stella Carson now owned the Moonbeam Mine got around quickly in Clover City. In the front of the saloon, two men sat at a table. Al Lawson's forehead was creased with a deep frown.
Listen, Sam, I don't know what this is all about.
I don't have time to tell you. We've had our eyes on the Moonbeam for a long time.
Yeah, sure, but it don't...
No but, Sam. My plan works out. We'll have it. Shut up. Here she comes.
Mr. Ellison?
Oh, yes. This is Mr. Lawson, ma'am. Here, let me help you.
Thank you.
I understand you come up here to the Yukon to look for your father, Edward Carson.
Yes, that's true.
Well, I think me and Al can help you out.
You can?
You see, we met a man named Carson about 2 months ago in Barlow Rapids. Now, it's kind of a hard sort of place to get to, but Al and me could get you up there.
Oh, I can hardly believe
it. Yeah, I guess it is good news. You've been looking for him for quite a while.
How soon can we start?
Just as soon as you're ready.
I can be ready in 20 minutes.
Fine. Now, you meet Al and me at the north end of town. Ought to be dark by then, but we know the trail.
All right, I'll see you then.
Later, Stella Carson came down the stairs of the Black Ace.
Hello there, Mr. Smith.
Well, you're looking very happy about something, Miss Carson.
Oh, I am happy. I've just been talking to two men who are going to take me to my father.
What?
They said they saw him at a place called Barlow Rapids. I'm going to meet them now at the north end of town.
Oh, I see. They must have been the fellows who stopped in here a few minutes ago.
They did?
Yes. They said you should meet them at the Mounties' cabin instead. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, I see. Well, wish me luck, Mr. Smith.
I do, Stella. I wish you luck always. With all my heart.
At Sergeant Preston's cabin, the Mountie was amazed that Stella Carson told him her reason for being there. King, standing close to his master, listened to the conversation.
And you say Smith told you to come here, instead of meeting the two men as you'd arranged?
Yes, he said they told him to give me that message.
I see.
Well, where are you going, Sergeant?
To the north end of town. Come on, King.
Wait for me.
Darkness had settled over Clover City, and at the north end of town, two men dragged a limp figure toward the river's edge.
How do you suppose he knew what we were up to?
I don't know.
Should have made a mistake when he told us to clear out of town. Well, he's unconscious now. Never knew what hit him when you stopped for the butt of your gun. Come on. That group of trees will keep anybody from seeing us. But I want to get him under the ice.
Meanwhile, Sergeant Preston, Stella Carson, and the great dog King had approached the point the two men had designated as a meeting place. Darkness made it impossible to see the trail. King caught the scent, and slowly, with a suppressed excitement, he padded about in the snow to find in which direction the trail led.
What is it, boy? Yes, I know you're here, fella.
But King hadn't caught the Mountie's hand in his teeth simply to make his presence known. Persistently, he pulled his arm.
What's he making all that noise for, Sergeant?
I don't know. Hey there, King. He's on his weight against my legs. He seems to be pushing me. That's it. He wants us to head toward the river.
As the two men reached the river's edge, Al Lawson held a match to a lantern he carried. The flame burned low, but threw enough light for them to test the ice.
Put the lantern down on the bank, Al. I want to get this over with and be out of here before any... What's this? A dog!
Don't pay any attention to him. You head back to town.
Well, that Carson girl's going to be wondering why we ain't up on the trail.
She knows why you're not on the trail. Put up your hands, both of you.
Hey, Mr. Mountie.
Sergeant, it's Mr. Smith. Why, they've beaten
him to...
Are
these the two men you were supposed to meet, Miss Carson?
Why, yes, but I don't understand all this.
All the pieces fit together. These men probably knew you owned the Moonbeam Mine. They were planning to force you to sign it over to them.
It was all his idea. He said we could get her to sign it over and then do away with it.
Oh, you dirty double-crosser.
But how? Why did they beat Mr. Smith? I don't know.
You told me you mentioned to him about your intended trip.
Yes?
He knew your father couldn't possibly be in Barlow Rapids. You see, he's your father.
What?
Right. He's coming around now. You two are under arrest for attempted murder and conspiracy to defraud.
Sergeant, is she all right?
Yes, I'm all right. Father.
Oh, Stella.
It's all right, Dad. It's all right.
Yes, King, old boy. Everything is all right. Thanks to you, the case is closed.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit. And all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at the same time. This is Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Okay, so let's see. Since Challenge of the Yukon did actually have an original air date of the beginning of June, let's actually do... or June, April, that is. Let's actually see what happened in the month of April. I'm going to pick one thing out. Let's see. Okay, Dimitri see if I can pronounce his name. Dmitry Shostakovich. Oh. 8th Symphony premieres in New York. So actually, if you listen in the background right now, you'll actually hear part of that, and I'll finish playing it out. It's actually a pretty cool little piece. So that happened on April 2nd. The original air date was April 6th. So just one thing for us to look at. Instead of doing a whole bunch of things, I just want to do one. Let's see what else. Send me an email, podcast@otrwesterns.com. Call, leave me a voicemail, 707-98-OTRDW. Again, that's 707-986-8739. Tomorrow's going to be an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel. Until then, have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.